You're listening to Riot Gear, expert conversations on the things we have learned, helping business owners improve their digital maturity. And now here's your host, Rob Merkowitzer.
Thanks for joining us on our fourth podcast in the Riot Solutions series. I'm Rob Merkowitzer, Managing Director and CEO. And today I have with me John Robinson, otherwise known as JR, who's our National Security Operations Manager. Welcome, JR. Maybe you want to give us a little bit of background on yourself and an introduction.
Sure. Thanks, Rob. My background's a bit of the bumpy path. I went down the industry route. So I started way back when milk was 22 cents a bottle with cream on the top on a service desk at a medium enterprise retailer, and then progressed to a network field engineer, security administrator, and system administrator. When I was a system administrator, I had a crack at one semester of university, and I found it was not for me. I found the security and industry certifications was far more relevant for what I was doing at the time. From a security administrator, I then merged into the Bridgepoint story, consulting in infrastructure, and then starting to dabble in penetration testing. And I was part of the whole Bridgepoint Telstra acquisition story, which then I eventually landed at Riot as an infrastructure consultant, penetration testing, and some attack simulations.
So a pretty well-rounded background. Sounds like you're an IT misfit. And connect pretty nicely to what we're trying to do here at Riot. Today we want to cover some, I suppose, myths, if nothing else. We know cybersecurity is absolutely everywhere at the moment, and in some of the previous podcasts with Nick and Scott and MBR, the most common theme across all three of them, to be honest, has been the security component. It's extremely relevant, and of course COVID has expanded that, and we've seen that more recently. There's a myriad of terms, and I know even at Riot we've struggled a little bit around the identity of what we do and how we help and what it is that we actually provide our customers, albeit, as always, trying to keep it very simple. Just from the top of my head, from SOC, SIEM, SOAR, MDR, EDR, IDR, MSS, MSP, IR, and threat intelligence, how the hell are we making this simple for our customers, JR? Because I'm confused.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of a word jumble. Really, you just got to have a look back at what are the common issues that we see. Majority of my team are ex-system administrators for a reason. They know what it's like to be the client. They know what the juggle is. So what we do in our SOC, essentially, is we need to ask ourselves, and we bake this in from the get-go, every time we fire an alert to the client, we ask ourselves, so what? What does this mean? What will I do with this? What should I be doing, and why is it important to me? We really bring the relevance. So the big word jumble of SOC, SIEM, EDR, take a random stab at anything, it's you just really just need to bring it down to the relevance.
I think it's a good point. I mean, you know, we're attempting across the business here to make things as simple as possible, and I suppose play the 80-20 rule, and security is probably one of those very wide umbrellas that can get lost. A question I've got is, how do we differentiate all of these components and make sure that we're providing the level of value that every individual customer that comes to us actually wants? I mean, surely we can't just throw a blanket over the top and offer one level of service expecting it's going to suit a wide number of customers' requirements.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we typically do is we don't stick to a use case catalog, which is hard set. We don't stick to priority levels, which are hard set. We set our SLAs. They're solid and hard set because you need to have solid SLAs. However, we allow clients to tune priority levels based on their environment and their business risk profile as well. So a account lockout for one client might be a priority 3, so it'll be a fairly low priority. But if that's a VIP user, they can then move that to a higher priority. So an account lockout of, say, a C-level, CEO, CIO, take the pick, that'll be a high priority because that's not normal. So we allow that customization and tailored approach for each client.
Right. So we're introducing a level of agility here within the security service itself. So let's dig a little bit deeper into, I suppose, the common words or the common themes that we hear in the industry and that customers are hearing around SOC versus SIEM versus, say, threat intelligence. With Nick, we spoke a little bit about SIEM being the security information event monitoring technology that has been around for quite some time. And then in more recent times, Security Operations Center, i.e. SOC. What is the major difference between these two? Because obviously one is more a service, the other is more technology-based. But I think from a customer perspective, it can get a little bit confusing as to what I'm looking at in the market and what I need to provide true visibility for a network.
Well, it's exactly that. A SIEM is the tool that a SOC will typically use to then alert clients for issues or events that are happening in that environment. The whole concept of SOC is relying on an adjacent team with a defined level of security skill set to then self-triage, assign criticality, and then action alerts. Whilst that methodology is sound, it typically doesn't work for most Australian organisations because no one typically has that security headcount for that model.
So JR, what we've attempted to do is put together the technology, such as the SIEM and the vulnerability management, the people, which is really the Security Operations Center, and baked into that the process. Why, as a customer, is a managed security service so important?
The service is important from the fact that it brings the people, the technology, and the process, as you said before, out of the box. So from the service perspective, it's bespoke. We'll modify the priority levels, the engagement methodology to business risk and problems, and then tailor it to those risks and problems to make sure that we're actually on the money with the value adds.
And that's not something that I can get if I, say, build that internally, or if I outsource everything to a traditional SOC?
From it, we see this question come up quite a bit around, well, I can do this internally. Absolutely, you can do it internally, but consider the size and the headcount that we have to man this service with the skill sets there. There's 10 people to man this service, inclusive of myself, and with the growth that we're undergoing, there's going to be another 3 to 4, keep it on par with the threat landscape and the constantly changing threat landscape, but also technologies change, like Rapid7, constantly upgrading, constantly changing. Splunk, much the same. It's not a set and forget type service.
So we make the decision, we're going out to market for a managed security service, and we contract an organization to do that. Where are the pain points then from a customer's perspective internally? Once I make that jump,
what we commonly see is the onboarding effort. Onboarding these type of services is an effort. So there are various things that need to be deployed into the environment to harvest those logs and then ship them up into the service provider. Change control introduces headaches. There are delays with change controls typically, and for these type of projects, you don't get change control vetoes. You must abide by those. The other consideration is if there's other managed service providers in there, they will have change control processes as well. So another delay. But once the service starts standing up, you'll actually start highlighting security posture. And in most cases, in what we've seen, the security posture is a lot worse than what the organization initially thought. And once the logs start flowing, alerts start firing, you start finding the unknowns in the environment, and then the profile of the work package is a lot bigger than what was originally anticipated for operational teams.
So finding the unknowns, and let's be honest, that's a little bit scary for customers. I mean, to be blunt, being ignorant is easy. Once we start making these things more and more visible, we scratch the surface and we find more and more things. We like to take a consultative approach. Do you think that makes a big difference rather than sky falling in type scenario?
Yeah, we're not big, especially coming from the offensive security side of things in recent years. I'm not very big on the whole scaremongering approach, because what it does is it really just spooks operational teams, and then it gets them offside. So the partnership type model doesn't work then. Having that consultative approach, and this is where having ex-sys admins or people that have come from that side of the fence help a lot, because they speak with a lot more empathy. We understand where that's come from, and then we talk to, all right, so this is how we can approach this. There are a few different ways. We find this way is probably going to be more efficient for your organization or operation.
Cybersecurity with empathy. I like that. That might just stick. Look, we've chosen to locate our SOC locally here in Brisbane. We know that these things are often offshored, particularly when we're talking about service desks. It does keep things very simple. What are some of the advantages of having these sysadmins and cybersecurity analysts locally, in country, even in state? And I'm really wanting to hear from your experience.
So where it helps being onshore and in the same time zone, that helps immensely. So time zones are a big thing. During standard operational hours, we're online as well. We're not 24/7 eyes on glass, we're 24/7 on priority one alerts only. That makes sense for most Australian organisations, because at the end of the day, majority of these incidents that are happening during business hours, or are being detected after hours, but they're only having reaction type benefits during business hours. A good example is an alert is fired off, we triage it, send it through to the client, another alert is fired off, triage it. There's an attack chain in flight. We have incident responders that can be on site with the client, local clients, within the hour. So you'll have a certified, well-experienced incident responder knocking on the front door, ready to assist within the hour. That's the differentiator.
So, JR, let's get into a little bit more detail here and tell the listeners what they really want to hear. What happens when something bad is detected? And can you give us a more recent real-world example?
Sure. Without naming names is always difficult, but we'll give it a shot. So setting the scene, relatively large global organization. We monitor the Australian part of that organization. Fully onboarded, maturity for the service is relatively healthy. And we detected a lot of account lockouts, and I'm pretty sure it was a Tuesday, in a parallel environment which we weren't monitoring. So via the domain controllers, which had various trusts, we were able to detect a lot of lockouts in the parallel environment. We alerted and addressed this with the client, which was the Australian client, and all good from that side. Shortly after that, the IT lead of the parallel environment asked for assistance. From that, within 7 minutes, we were able to mobilize into incident response protocols. And what we found was, by using a cached credential, crypto malware had encrypted 90% of the server fleet. So what we first did is we isolated that environment from the rest of the global environments containing the threat, and then we moved to identification and remediation from there. Overall, it took us around a week and a half to clean that environment up, but there were a lot of learnings out of that for the client.
So 90% encryption of servers. So that is all of my servers in my data center holding my corporate data, now encrypted and held ransom, basically.
Correct. But the icing on the cake was the backup servers were also encrypted.
Oh, fantastic. So there's a bit of BCP and DR to be looked at there as well. One thing I just want to pick up there, so we actually helped remediate then as well for this particular customer?
Correct. So on the fly, in typical incident responses, again, using that system admin knowledge, we do make recommendations from a remediation standpoint. for incident responses, but also in the standard SOC type alerts. We'll add that tailored type recommendation to ensure that the sysadmin or the operational team on that side have a very good understanding of what they should be doing in that point.
Right, so that goes to your partnership point earlier. And how important is time?
Time is very important. So malware, especially in that example that I gave before, we basically had around a 30-minute window to isolate that environment before it would then pivot into other environments. So it was pretty imperative. It's probably one of the harder calls I've had to make in an incident response where I've basically said, grab the CIO now, we need to cut this link. The decision is you cut the link now, or in about an hour's time, your server fleet will be also encrypted. So pretty full on.
Well, that's a great story, JR, and absolutely represents why we do what we do. Thanks for your time today. I think it was really good to hear how we're bringing all those things together to try and provide an agile yet highly value service. It's something that I know you've been building for a couple of years here in Riot, doing a cracking job of it. We appreciate you listening to us, and we look forward to providing the fifth part of our podcast in the coming weeks.